Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're about to have a great visit. I know we are because we've done it so many times before. I know we can count on Joan Pride to give us a great interview. She always does a great job, and she's our good friend. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and I wonder how many times I've said that, Joan. Welcome back.
Boy, about a million times. Thanks, Jim. Happy to be here.
Maybe a couple of million, and it's good to have you back. What's happening inside the Beltway, as they say?
What's that? Well, you know, there's this kind of a scrambling for the exits right now.
Yeah.
Because Congress is trying to wrap up, and it won't be able to by the end of this week. But by the end of this week, they will be dispersed to the four corners of the globe, at least in this country.
And we'll be safer.
And well, in a sense, it'll be safer. It's just your own district will be less safe, I guess.
Right.
In order to campaign before the November 7th, I think it's November 7th, right? No, the November 7th elections.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And because they didn't get their work done, you know, it's like students who didn't get their term papers finished on time, they have to come back for what they call a lame duck session mm-hmm. after the elections.
Which the productivity of which will depend on how the election goes, right?
Well, and see, that's kind of the fascinating thing just for an observer here as a journalist. We love stuff like this because the House, probably not the Senate, but maybe the House could be led by the Democrats after this election. Now, the weird thing will be because technically we're still in the 109th Congress if they come back in November. The Republicans will still control Congress
mm-hmm.
no matter what happens in the
right.
elections because the Democrats don't take over till January. So the question to me becomes, well, what do they try to do and what will they be able to do?
Well, there's one thing that we reported on the last hour with Grace Marie Turner, and that's a health care program that makes some modifications to the health savings accounts. That's one thing that's on the docket.
Right.
I think
the House Ways and Means Committee just approved that, right?
Yeah, they did.
Yes.
And so that will get on out on the floor. But then it has to get through the Senate, which it's got a long way to go. But, Joan, and this is fascinating. I'm sure you and I will report more on this in the future. I'm sure you guys will be covering this. But it's a way to use money cross-platform from your IRA, for example, over to your HSA to pay for health care from your IRA.
Oh, right, right.
And so anyway, that's a fascinating thing to think about, Joan. This really, really was an aha moment for me when Grace Marie told us the last hour, Joan, that this is basically the beginning of the convergence of all the different kinds of retirement programs.
Right, and that's actually something that the president proposed a while back,
right.
in a sense. He kind of mm-hmm. wanted to propose just kind of one big account that could be tax-deferred or tax-free.
Right, and you could use it for health care. Because if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense because most of us don't have all that much money in any account. And see, and the truth, the other thing is, Joan, you can put more money per year in your health savings account than you can in your IRA.
Well, yeah, it's kind of silly to have different rules for different accounts, and
right.
so it would be nice to streamline it and make it all uniform.
Wait a minute, Joan. This is Joan Pride agreeing with President Bush?
Yeah, I know. Shocking, isn't it?
Make a note. Dave, write that down up there. Let's record. Make sure we get this
time
recorded.
Yeah, timestamp that. Yeah.
Absolutely. This is a moment in time, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
We'll all be saying this is where we were when that happened.
There you go.
Joan, let's move over and talk about oil prices. Boy, howdy, are we happy about it. It's a little bit sick, though. It's a little bit demented. Isn't it a little bit dysfunctional to say we're so happy that oil prices, the gas is only like $2.05 a gallon or something like that?
Oh, and I agree with you, no question about it. Although when gas in this area was getting up to about $3.20-something, I started to get frightened it would go to $4 or $5. So I'm thrilled that, you know, we're well below $3, and I don't think we'll see $3 again for a long time, it sounds like. You know,
please,
barring any unforeseen calamity.
Joan, don't say that, please.
Sorry.
Please.
Sorry. I didn't mean to jinx anything.
You're tempting fate, Joan.
Yeah, I know.
Please don't do that. I am so superstitious about stuff like this. But I saw gas like around $2.05 the other day.
Oh, I've actually heard about places around here, not close in, but places out in the boonies around Washington of under $2.
Wow. So, but it is kind of sick to think that that's, we're happy about that, but we are, and because we know that the economy isn't doing too bad when it was $3 a gallon.
Right.
Think about what the economy could do, and think about how much. Think about Joan. I keep thinking about how much of a godsend this is. This reduction is to people who are on fixed incomes. Some of the lower income folks, like talk show hosts and journalists and people like that, who need the break. And this is all good news.
Yeah.
But Joan, the demand hasn't changed. Well, it may have been a little bit. Maybe the higher prices caused U.S. demand to come down. I think that impacted the price a little bit.
Well, and I think what it did also was steer people away from maybe a little bit from gas-guzzling cars.
I think that happened too, much to the chagrin of the car companies, because they had those cars on the lot.
Right.
But the other thing is, Joan, the big deal was that the speculation quotient in the price of oil, which some of my experts, including Steve Forbes, had said it was as much as maybe 10-15% or more of the price of oil was in speculation. That apparently, in fact, I asked Steve this on Monday, and he said, well, he said he thinks the speculators basically, you know, decide to go elsewhere.
It's just amazing, though, how suddenly and unexpectedly that happened. You know, one day gas was $3.40, and the next minute it was $3.10 and dropping precipitously.
But see, that proves what he and Richard DeKayser, one of my economists from National City Bank, have said on the show, what Steve and Richard have said on the show, and that is that quite a bit of the price was because of speculation. Well, the only thing that can go in and come out that fast is an artificial price level.
Oh, sure.
Based on speculation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that proves that. And so now apparently they're not as upset about what's going on in the Middle East, which I hope that's good news.
That I don't understand either. To me, the Middle East is just as hot as it was yesterday, and yet the speculators have decided to change their minds about it.
You know, Joan, I wonder if maybe they know more about what's really happening over there than what you and I see on CNN. I mean, you and I hear about 60 people being killed in a 3-square-mile area of Baghdad, and sometimes we have a tendency to transfer that to the whole region. And that's
well,
not
I guess
what's going
I was
on
also.
Over...
I guess I was also thinking about the instability in Lebanon and the problems in Israel as well.
Which that has settled down, as you know, in the last 30 days.
Iran
is still the scary one to me, and I agree with you about that. Well, I don't know that we've settled anything on that deal. We got a lot more to come, folks. Right after these messages, Joan Pryde is our guest here in Chicago to take us out.
I spend a lot of money and I spend a lot of time.
Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check it out and use it to your advantage. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. You can subscribe to my blog as well. The blog comes every weekday, the newsletter on Sunday by email. And so check out all the resources we have there available for you at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Joan, let's move down and talk about... let's talk about the demand for oil. We talked about speculation a minute ago and how this is all affecting oil prices and gas prices. You know, one of the most fascinating things to me, Joan, about the U.S. marketplace is how we're still using more oil than ever before. But every dollar of GDP today requires less oil per dollar of GDP than it did say 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Well, I didn't know that. Oh.
Well, and the thing is that's the good news. We have gotten less. We've become more efficient in our use of petroleum. Now we still use a lot of it, but we become more efficient. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because of what's happening in India and China, the two fastest growing countries in the world. They're using a lot of oil, but they're still very inefficient with it.
Oh, I see.
See?
Yeah. Yeah.
They still have a lot of two-cycle engines, for example, which spew out about 25% of the oil that goes in comes out in the form of the exhaust. In other words, it's very, a two-cycle engine is a very inefficient engine compared to a four-cycle engine.
Oh.
And so they have a lot of those. All those little scooters you see driving around,
right?
You know, in the reels that you see, those are all two-cycle engines.
Right.
You've heard of the brown cloud, right? You know what the brown cloud is, right?
Pollution.
Yeah, the brown cloud. There's this huge brown cloud. I don't know where it is right now, but it hovers over the Pacific, any different places over the Pacific, and it's basically the aggregation of all of this pollution that's coming out of the Pacific.
Oh, no.
The Pacific Rim area. I've been hearing about it for a number of years. They're still burning a lot of, they're still polluting a lot over there in those countries.
Oh, sure.
And so if we could get them to be, their engines more efficient, we could get them to be operating more efficiently, that's something you never hear the greenies talking about, do you?
Well, that's a tough one. And that's
generations.
Gonna take time. Yeah.
Don't you think? Generations?
I would think so.
So that's one of the things we got going on. One of the things you guys are talking about this week, though, in addition to the price of oil, Joan, is some of the alternative fuels issues that are happening. Talk to us about that.
Well, this is kind of interesting because, and we've talked about these alternative fuels for quite a while because, as you know, states are now leading the way, which to me is kind of interesting that they're, getting the idea that they want to get people to accept renewable fuels and get investment going.
Right.
And of course, in a lot of these things, California is the leader, and here's no exception. Governor Schwarzenegger is trying to push biofuels and says he wants 4% of the state's electricity to come from biomass by 2010. And I don't know if that's an ambitious goal or a realistic goal or what.
Well, but you guys report that Congress is wanting by 2008, they want to require 10 billion gallons of ethanol be used in the U.S.
And about, and then 14 by 2050. Well, that sounds like a lot.
That sounds like a lot. Joan, I was reading something the other day, and incredibly, not in Kiplinger. I mean, typically I get all my news from Kiplinger.
But that's all the only thing you read.
But incredibly, I was reading somewhere else. I've forgotten exactly where. I think it was in a Forbes magazine.
Yeah.
That the alternative fuels, not corn, but switchgrasses and some of the other biofuels, that it costs more to create a gallon it costs more than the benefit of creating this. Now, obviously, it's cleaner burning and that sort of thing, but it's an expensive process to get those alternative products into fuel so they can burn them. There are other benefits other than just not being reliant upon carbon fuels.
Okay.
But it takes a lot of carbon fuels to create that. We haven't gotten efficient. We're not getting a good ROI on the petroleum that's being spent to create these things.
Ooh.
So that's one of the hurdles we've got to get over with. So, there was some of it is not just a matter of getting it dispersed into the marketplace, getting it diffused and where people are using it, where we don't mind ethanol, et cetera, et cetera. It's more than that. It's also an issue of what it takes to create one of these. And is it in the current, with the current technology, is it the right thing to do?
Yeah.
But this country has a tremendous ability to grow corn.
Well, that's true.
but I think corn is a similar thing. I mean, I think it's an expensive process to grow corn.
Right.
But we do get an ecological impact.
Oh, I would think so. Sure.
From burning the ethanol, there's no question
absolutely.
About that.
Right.
All right, Joan, we're going to take a quick break. Stand by. We're going to talk about banking when we come back, folks. Then we're going to move over. We've got some small business stuff to talk about, specifically about investing in small businesses. 29 after. Oh, by the way, that last song I told you was Chicago. It was really Steely Dan. I was just seeing if you were paying attention. Stay with us.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging around with me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, we consider that a sign of high intelligence, and we know you agree with us. Joan Pride is highly intelligent, too. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, anything else that we want to talk about on the gas prices? The only thing I'm going to say more about gas prices, Joan, is if oil prices will stay at $2, if gas prices, I should say, will stay at $2 a gallon,
right?
All of the predictions about the economy being below 3% next year will be bogus.
Yeah, I would think so.
And we can
forget about the R word.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right, which I never believed was going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
But
some naysayers out there.
Well, there are always those naysayers. They're always,
yeah.
A friend of mine calls them againstivists. You know what I mean? They're always against something, you know.
Yeah.
They're always finding it. They're negative Nellies. Is that what you call them? No, you call them naysayers.
Nervous Nellies.
Negative Nellies is also.
Oh, okay.
But or nattering nabobs. Who else calls them that?
Negativism.
Yeah. So anyway, the thing is that if we can keep oil at that price, I think we're looking at 3%+ growth next year. I think we're looking at continued expansion. I think I just think that there's so much can benefit from this. Inflation will come down. The Fed will maybe ease up on interest rates. If they would do that, if we got a rate cut by say next February, $2 oil prices and even one rate cut by the Fed next February, let's say, or January, you talk about an economy that would just leap.
Oh, sure.
That's what I think. So anyway, we'll see how it happens. Hopefully from my mouth to God's ears, right, folks?
Exactly.
Let's talk about banking, Joan. What are the banks up to these days?
Well, banks are trying to diversify more because some of them have gotten slammed by the housing slowdown. They've got slower sales and higher rates are just, you know, kind of slowing down the mortgage market. So banks need to look at other business.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about, you know, banks wanting to buy investment banks. They can get more into the stock market and things like that. But we're saying that's good for businesses because it'll give them more opportunities for one-stop shopping and banking services.
Well, and you know, this issue with banks and mortgages, banks make a lot of money on mortgages because they've got the customers, they've got the contacts.
Sure did.
They process the mortgage. Most of them have their own mortgage company. They process the mortgage, they get the fees, and then they sell it upstream to a mortgage accumulator, a consolidator, and who turns it into a mortgage-backed security eventually, and they get a little piece of the action, and then if the thing forecloses, I don't think they have any responsibility for it after that.
Right.
I think they're out of it. So that's a great profit center for banks, but. But that bloom is coming off that rose, as you say, because the housing market's down. In fact, you guys point out in your handy dandy little box over here, the little graphic, that housing sales, you're saying in 07 are going to be down. No, I'm sorry, they're currently at 9% decrease this year, and maybe 4% next year.
So it sounds like that drop will moderate, but 9% is quite a bit.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
But, and you know, Joan, the media keeps talking about what it looks like with new home sales and all the big publicly traded home builders. But that's not where the real impact is going to be felt. The real impact is going to be felt with the homeowners who own their houses and who can't sell them.
Right, exactly.
But I still think that that's just a little bit of a correction that's going to work its way through in the next few months. Joan. You're saying also that we shouldn't worry too much about bank failures.
Well, right. We're saying that, you know, that these kinds of cycles come along and banks are much stronger and more able to withstand this current downturn than in the past. You had really bad real estate problems. I think it was back in the early 80s where you saw a lot of savings and loan failures. But, you know, they've been pretty profitable and they've got their rainy day funds, so I don't think we have to worry about them.
with all of the financial products that are possible and all of the consumers and all the businesses who need and are able to employ and leverage those financial products and all the different things that Americans, at least, are looking for to help them manage their money, any bank that is allowed to be chartered that fails is, I don't even want to imagine how badly you'd have to manage a bank today to fail. I don't even want to meet those people. They're probably doing something wrong. They're probably, you know, doing something, some malfeasance or something if they fail. Stand by, quick break. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blassie. And when we come back, we're going to talk about small business investment companies. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're staying with us. Thank you for being here. Joan Pride is our guest, and Joan, I like your website.
I'm glad.
Kiplinger.com.
Mm-hmm.
We pronounce it Kiplinger, folks, but there's a G in there, and it's no extra letters. Kiplinger, just like you would think. Put a .com on the end of that, and you'll be introduced to a pretty darn cool website. And that's just the stuff that you can see without subscribing to anything. If you subscribe to their publications, you get to see a whole lot more stuff.
You get that much more, right?
Like their weekly, I should say, flagship publication, the Kiplinger Letter, which is now turned 83 years old and in its 84th year. And that's weekly. And then there's also the three biweekly letters, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, and the Agriculture Letter. And then there's a magazine, Joan, that's pretty cool. It's also available on newsstands. What's the name of that thing?
Right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And I bet you got a phone number, too, don't you?
Right. It's 800-544-0155.
I hope that 30-day free trial is still available that I worked so hard for, Joan.
Well, I'm sure the Jim Blassingame free trial is still there.
Be sure to ask them for that, folks, and get them to give you 30 days for free, and they'll do that. Joan, there's a program that was initiated a while back called Small Business Investment Companies, I should say, SBICs.
Yes.
And tell us what you know about those guys.
I'll tell you, I've got some good news after a lot of bad news. Small business investment companies were started a long time ago. As you know, they're private firms licensed by the SBA to help.
And I actually know some people who run them.
And they help finance small businesses. And there's two types. One really type provides loans, and the other really provides equity investment. Well, back in 1994, Congress did what a lot of people felt was not a good thing, which was to pass legislation that stopped the creation of any new SBIC to provide equity investments. Mm-hmm. So the lending SBICs were okay.
Was it 94 or 04?
I'm sorry, 04.
Right, okay.
04, sorry about that.
Yeah.
Now, what that meant was you couldn't have any more new ones, and the ones that were currently existing, their funds to invest were estimated to run out in 2012. So after 2012, you'd have no more equity investment by SBICs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now Congress, both the House and the Senate, chairmen of the small business committees, are pushing legislation, and we think it's going to get passed probably by next year, that would allow SBICs to come back, these equity capital SBICs to be kind of resurrected. There'll be more limits on them because what they did in 2004 is they kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater. They felt there were some problems in the program, but instead of fixing the problems, they just ended the program.
Right. Now, if you go to the SBA.gov website,
yes,
and you go to financing your business on the right side, and you go down to the equity financing, you'll see a whole lot of different links there, folks, to all these different opportunities.
Right.
And what you'll also see is you will see the somewhere in there, and I don't have it as handy as I thought I was going to have it. I was going to take you exactly there, but if you'll just keep noodling around a little bit there, what you'll see is literally a list, a grid list of all the different SBICs. and what those companies in what they the industries they like. Some of them like restaurants, some of them like technology companies, some of them
and they like
retail.
Different regions too.
Exactly. Some of them only invest in the Southeast. Thank you, Joan. That's an excellent point. And it'll say we loan money, or we in or, you know, it's an equity program or it's a loan program, and we go anywhere from 50,000 to 100,000, or we go anywhere from 500,000 to 5 million. And they give you what the parameters are. There's a phone number there. There's an address, maybe even a contact. It's a great resource, Joan, if you're looking for equity.
Oh, definitely.
Or financing beyond what you can get from your bank.
Right, and that's why it's so important to keep these kinds of SBICs continuing.
Well, I actually had somebody. This is rich, Joan. You're going to get a kick out of this. I actually know some people who've done this, who've started one of these SBICs.
Oh.
And they were getting really indignant, and they were blaming President Bush for cutting back on the SBIC money. And I said, well, okay, you don't like that, right? You want them to be able to, you want the SBA to have more, to be able to do more of these. And they said, yes.
Right.
And I said, well, your SBIC, you have one that recently closed, right? That you wrapped it up, right? You finished it off. They said, yes. I said, how did it do? They said, well, I said, how did your investors do? Did they make money or did they lose money? They said, oh, well, they lost money. And, you know, I didn't say this to them at the time, but I probably should have said, well, maybe you're one of the reasons why the government cut out the equity programs for a while.
Well, right, because there was, you know, the SBA is left holding the bag when these investments go sour. And now with the new SBICs, the SBA is going to, some of its exposure will be more limited. And it'll also, I think, get a larger little chunk of the action if things go well. And that's not so they can run around and spend it, but it's so that they can put more money back into the SBIC program and make sure that it continues.
The SBA, like all other entities, including other parts of our government, has got to learn to be more self-sufficient.
Oh, sure.
And less beholden upon tax dollars.
Right.
You know, the even our military is being taught how to operate more efficiently, more like a business than like a government entity. Joan, this is going to be the key to getting the things that we need in the 21st century. We've all got to be more self-reliant. You know yourself, Joan, you've seen nonprofit organizations are no longer able to count on grants. They've got to come up with partnerships to raise the funds that they need, don't they?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. It's 10 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride and I will be right back. Stay with us.
Well, I was moving down the road in my VA4. I had a shine on my boots. I had my sideburns low with my New York brim.
Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, let's move down and talk about, let's move over to page 3, bottom of page 3, on regulations. You guys talk about some new pro-business regulatory czar. Now, Susan Dudley, that's who is going to be appointed?
She is going to be appointed. She'll be the chief overseer of federal regulations. And what's interesting is it says that she is a scholar with the Regulatory Studies Program at George Mason, and she is against what she calls regulatory overreach.
That makes her my hero then, Joan.
Yeah.
I love her already. I don't even know her. I've never seen her.
And we think she's going to slow action on proposed rules such as mine safety, pipelines, power plant emissions, and wetlands.
Okay. Now, here we go.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't look good for Bambi, and I'm upset. But, you know, I guess I'm in the minority.
And Thumper.
Here.
Don't forget Thumper, Joan.
Nobody else cares. And Thumper.
Are you reading that off of CNN's scroll line or there?
Well,
or something,
I'm certainly not reading it off Fox News Channel, I can tell you that.
Well, let me put this in perspective for you for small business. I don't know about the mine safety business, Joan, but let me put it in perspective for small business. Today, every small business pays over $7,000 per employee per year just for regulatory compliance.
Wow.
Over $7,000. When I started doing this show, Joan, in 1997, that number was $6,000.
Gee.
And it's more than double what large companies pay in compliance per employee per year. And the reason is because we can't spread the compliance expense over as much business. We don't have, in other words, if we've got 15 employees, it may cost us just as much to comply in terms of cost of compliance as it does a 100-employee company.
Yeah.
And it just kills a small company.
And there's, no question.
I mean, I know that you and I kid each other, but I know that you appreciate the fact that small businesses probably have too many regulations they have to keep up with. And so many laws that are passed, small business is not taken into account as much. And even though we've got an ombudsman from the SBA, we've got the Office of Advocacy who are required to look, and the Congress is required to show them how any new regulation would impact small business. Even with all that, the price for compliance for small business is going up every year.
Well, yeah, there's got to be happy medium. I mean, it's important to protect the environment and other things like that, and safety is very important, but not if it's driving small businesses out of business.
Well, one of the things that I'm kind of glad to see, Joan, that I think is still happening, is there was a time when these regulators would play gotcha regulatory. They play the gotcha game.
Right.
Which means that if you were out of compliance, you basically were tried and convicted and fined and sentenced and, you know, charged. But now more of these regulatory agencies are coming by and saying, okay, look, you're out of compliance. Let me help you get back into compliance.
Right.
I think that there's a friendlier environment out there, less of a gotcha attitude. I hope that that's still happening. I know that not too long ago. Joan, we talked about the Federal Reserve a minute ago, and you guys say that you think they're finished raising rates. I think you're right.
Boy, I sure hope so.
What is it, 5.5 prime now? Fed funds rate?
I believe so, yes.
5.5, something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, and what was it, 2 years ago it was 1%?
And threatening to be zero, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly go to do the Japan model and go to zero.
Right.
I really would like to see what would happen if they could back off a little bit. Because, you know, Joan, just the gesture, never mind the number, but just the trend, the gesture of going down would really be a big deal to the economy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Joan, one more thing we got to talk about. Yesterday, the stock market, the Dow Jones, almost went to the new record, 822 or something like that. I mean 11,722.
Yeah, it's well over 11,000 now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's close to the record. What do you think? You think it's going to make it today?
Today? Boy.
Come on, Joan. Give me a prediction. Don't be a mean mouth.
Okay, yes, it will.
Well, Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she said it. She's drawn a line in the sand.
Don't buy on my recommendation.
It will, yeah. Joan, if you like that, she'll have a tip for you later. Hey,
great.
Joan, thank you for being here. Good job
today.
Thank
you, Jim. Thanks.
Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And as you know, this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.